I got that pro fighter attitude. I'm in the octagon with the podcast on. Let's talk about it on Scraptitude. You know I've been the best. Grab my belt and begin to flex so wild. I might hit the ref. We got the winner circle segments and the 2-on-5 takeaways with Tim and Jeff. So just kick back, grab a brew, it's fight night. So you know what we have to do, whether a power punch or a grapple move. You know we got you covered on Scraptitude. So just kick back, grab a brew, it's fight night. So you know what we have to do, whether a power punch or a grapple move. You know we got you covered on Scraptitude. Yeah,
scrap, scrap.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to Tim Talk 289, brought to you by the Scraptitude Podcast. This is your host, Timothy E. Lewis, taking you coast to coast, doing the most. Thank you for tuning in. For the uninitiated, this podcast contains three key perspectives meant to give you a comprehensive base of information to make informed wagers come fight night. Those three perspectives are as follows. First, an aggregate of the odds makers, so you know what Vegas is thinking. Then, a look at the math, courtesy of the Scraptitude Analytics database. And lastly, me, the viewer, the eyeballs, an analyst with a decade-plus experience here to fill all the gaps in between. Now, before we get into the four fights I have selected from UFC 289, we need to review the fights from the last pay-per-view. The hits and the misses, Tim Talk 288. The fights we surveyed were as follows. Marina Rodriguez versus Virna Jandaroba. Drew Dober versus Matt Frivola. Jessica Andrade against Yan Zhaonan. Bilal Muhammad taking on Gilbert Burns. And Aljamain Sterling clashing with Henry Cejudo to unify the bantamweight belt. On this card, the odds makers went in uncharacteristic 0-5, meaning all five of their favorites came out as losers. Me, on the other hand, I went 3-5, missing on the Jandaroba Marina Rodriguez fight, as well as the Drew Dober Matt Frivola fight. Although, if you tuned into that last pod, I did like some Frivola finish props. The call of the night was telling y'all to hit that Yan Zhaonan money line in what was an incredible upset over Jessica Andrade, flattening her with the right hand in the first round. I also had two outcome-specific predictions in Bilal Muhammad and Aljamain Sterling, both securing decision victories. While we want to hit 5-5, those 3-5 would have you coming out ahead if you bet Tim Talk predictions straight up. Now, without further hesitation, let's get into Tim Talk 289.
Yo, yeah.
The first bout on the docket is an enticing middleweight clash between Chris the Action Man Curtis and Nassourdine Imavov. Currently, Imavov sits as a minus 152 favorite to the plus 125 underdog of Chris Curtis. In regards to percentages, that converts to a 60.3% implied likelihood of victory for Imavov to the 44.4% implied likelihood for Curtis. Imavov is a 6'3" fighter who is light on his feet and has a big frame. He has developed as a fixture in this middleweight division with exciting finishes over the likes of Edmund Shabazian and Ian Heinisch. Imavov is, however, coming off of a loss after his recent step up in competition taking on Chris Curtis's training partner, Sean Strickland. Strickland, a late replacement for Kelvin Gastelum, took Imavov to town, embarrassing the surging prospect. What was most shocking about that fight is Strickland taking the bout on short notice appeared to be a favorable matchup, at least in the context of his style, being that he was going to box and attempt to keep the fight standing for the duration against Imavov. Chris Curtis, after a blazing start to his UFC career, has had a rocky road of late, dropping fights to Jack Hermanson and Kelvin Gastelum in two out of his last three fights. So Curtis at 35 and Imavov at 28 have similar stories. They are both struggling to crack into this top 10 area and ascend from interesting prospects to bona fide contenders. At a glance, what stands out to me is the respective experience. Chris Curtis has 40 professional mixed martial arts fights to just 16 for Nassourdine Imavov. This will be Curtis's fifth fight in the last year, to just three for Imavov. Despite the massive gap in experience between the two, I don't expect that to be much of a factor here. Chris Curtis fights the same against everyone. He bobs and weaves, looks for big body shots, and hunts you until you slow down enough to get hit with those hammers. Comparatively, Imavov is going to bounce on the outside like a buoy over wave caps. You will be able to see some of the influence of training partner Cyril Gane in Imavov's style. Now, both qualitatively and quantitatively, there are things that worry me for Imavov. While he has some power, he has yet to register a knockdown in his UFC career. And while he can wrestle, it is unlikely that he finds himself able to ground Chris Curtis, who has a stout 100% takedown defense in the UFC. On the qualitative side, we just saw Imavov baffled by Chris Curtis's friend and longtime training partner, Sean Strickland. I have little doubt that Strickland's success led to this being an attractive matchup for Chris Curtis. Despite that, Curtis would probably take just about anyone who signs on the dotted line. The key to Imavov winning this fight is employing the Jack Hermanson approach: lateral movement, quick hands, and selective striking. If he hangs out in middle range or gets coaxed into a firefight, it is going to be a tough night. To me, it's likely that this bout comes down to the second round. Curtis is a slow starter. Nasruddin Imavov has shown some cardiovascular issues in the past, so that second round could very well be the swing round, just as it was in Chris Curtis's bout with Kelvin Gastelum. Personally, I think Chris Curtis is in rhythm with his recent array of fights. He's had a good showing against Kelvin Gastelum, and he's going to have his reads ready for this Imavov fight. I think he edges out the second round and starts to put it on Imavov in the third, winning by late TKO or decision. Lock it in.
Yo, yeah.
Next up, we have a barn burner in the featherweight division as Dan Ige takes on Nate Landwehr. Currently, Ige is a minus 254 favorite to the plus 202 aggregate underdog of Nate Landwehr. In terms of percentages, that converts to a 71.8% implied likelihood of victory to the 33.1% implied likelihood of Nate Landwehr. Similar to the prior fight between Chris Curtis and Nasruddin Imavov, this is a clash between two hungry fighters who have struggled to meaningfully break into the upper echelon of the division, giving tough fights but coming up short in key moments. Right off the bat, noticing Nate Landwehr as an underdog, one might see his superior career win rate and similar opponent strength of schedule as reasons why he is a candidate to stage an upset on Saturday night. As a fan of Nate Landwehr, the man who does not negotiate with fatigue or pain, I would like to see that, but I'm here to caution you against that wager. While those data points are not incorrect, to my eyes, Dan Ige has faced greater competition in his longer tenured time in this UFC featherweight division. Furthermore, he has never been finished. As you may recall, I am quoted saying, durability is the best ability. You need to be in the fight to win the fight. And Nate Landwehr has been silenced from his consciousness by the likes of Herbert Burns. Now at 35 years old, after stringing together a couple victories, there is some optimism in the Landwehr camp. However, his badassery, his charge forward, and his disregard for his own well-being is not well-suited for the opponent that is Dan Ige. While Ige has his limitations, namely in covering the distance against taller or more selective strikers, as well as with takedown defense, those issues aren't likely to come to front and center against an opponent like Nate Landwehr, who's going to pressure with his head on the center line and dare you to exchange with him. This approach may be exciting, but it has come at a cost. Landwehr has yet to tabulate a knockdown in the UFC, but has been dropped four times, leading to a 0.98 knockdown absorption rate. I see Dan Ige starching Nate Landwehr in the first or second round. You can hammer those round-specific bets for big-time plus money. Lock it in.
Yo, yeah.
Next on the agenda, the People's Main Event. Charles Dubronx Oliveira returns, taking on Benil Dariush in what is ostensibly a title eliminator bout. Currently, Oliveira sits as a plus 123 underdog to the minus 148 favorite of Benil Dariush. In terms of percentages, that converts to a 44.8% likelihood of victory for Oliveira to the 59.7% implied likelihood for Benil Dariush. Now, I am right about a lot of things, but predicting the ascension of Benil Dariush was beyond my predictive capacity. Nonetheless, it has happened, and I have had the opportunity to both enjoy and analyze the reasons that have given birth to this unlikely ascension. Similar to Oliveira's career resurgence, Benil Dariush spent a long time fighting a lot of heavy-hitting names in the UFC. He took his knocks, lost some fights that maybe he should have won in hindsight, but he's now put together all of his tools to become a comprehensively dangerous fighter. He now yearns for what Oliveira has previously attained, UFC gold. And for Oliveira, this is a chance to come back after facing a tough loss, a devastating loss, a one-sided loss against Islam Makhachev. Not only that, but it's Charles Oliveira's opportunity to test himself against an opponent that poses similar stylistic concerns. A southpaw who has some degree of wrestling acumen, a dangerous grappling profile, and effective striking that'll make him pay for his overexuberance. The variable that makes this fight so intriguing but also so terrifying to bet on is their collective loss by finish rate. For Benil Dariush, it's around 15%, and for Charles Oliveira, it's at 19%. Not only that, but both men have knockout and submission losses, as well as plenty of victories in each of those categories on their resume. So it could get done anyhow, anyway, making an outcome-specific wager tough to make. What I like for Oliveira is that he's younger and more experienced. He is the more technical striker, as well as the better athlete. In terms of the kickboxing, I give Oliveira the advantage. The issue with that is his defensive irresponsibility, coupled with the natural timing and heavy hands that Benil Dariush possesses. Oliveira's superior striking acumen comes mostly in the offensive realm. He forgoes his defense entirely in efforts to put on an ass-whooping, overwhelm his opponent, and create a vulnerability that allows him to seize a finish. The difference maker for Benil Dariush is that he should be the superior wrestler. We just saw him put on a clinic of takedown defense and scrambling against renowned grappler Matheus Gamrot. It's unlikely that Oliveira takes him down, and if he does, it's unlikely that Oliveira is able to maintain top position or achieve a submission. Not impossible, but unlikely. And in my opinion, it is more likely that Benil Dariush is the one who initiates the takedown and establishes top control, which has me worried for Charles Oliveira. You see, because Oliveira has so much success with his submission game, most submission wins in UFC history, wrestling defense, takedown defense have not been a point of emphasis for his career. Additionally, Charles Oliveira's reckless approach allows him to get dropped, a situation where he's comfortable against many fighters because he can rely on his jiu-jitsu. But as we saw with Islam Makhachev, a savvy grappler will use that time when Oliveira is shaking out the cobwebs to seize upon a submission. Benil Dariush will not be intimidated to go to the mat with Charles Oliveira, and that's why he is the favorite in this bout. So while I see what the odds makers are thinking, I also believe they oftentimes overestimate the styles make fights paradigm of analyzing these bouts. When you have a hyper-experienced and super toolsy fighter like Charles Oliveira, who has an athleticism advantage, that can supersede technique or a skill-for-skill breakdown of the fight. To be frank, I'm much more interested in watching this bout than betting on it. There's just so many ways it can go. It's super volatile, and both men are able to finish the fight or be finished in any way. However, for the purpose of this podcast and to make a prediction, I'd say there's a little meat on the bone for Dariush by decision. Oliveira has not lost a decision since all the way back in, what was that? 2013 against Frankie Edgar, someone who was able to use his wrestling and submission defense to stifle Charles Oliveira. Beneil Dariush has those same tools, and I could see him taking the Tony Ferguson approach as he inches his way through to a title shot without taking too many risks. So Beneil Dariush at plus 330-ish to win by decision.
Yo, yeah.
The last bout to be covered on Tim Talk 289 is a title fight between the quote G-W-O-A-T, Amanda Nunes, the Lioness, taking on Irene Aldana. Currently, the Lioness sits as a minus 335 favorite to the plus 256 underdog of Aldana. In terms of percentages, that converts to a 77% implied likelihood of victory for Nunes to the 28.1% for Aldana. Both women are 35 years old, and Aldana steps in as a late replacement for Juliana Pena, who had to pull out of the highly anticipated trilogy bout with Amanda Nunes. To be frank, I'm shocked by the odds. I expected Amanda Nunes to be, I don't know, a minus 600 in this bout. No offense to Irene Aldana, she is a gamer and she's been looking for this opportunity for a long time. But part of the reason she's been looking for a long time is because she has not been able to earn it. And now you're trying to tell me that somebody who lost a 62-year-old Holly Holm absorbing 154 significant strikes and 5 takedowns is supposed to defeat Amanda Nunes. Come on, you gotta be kidding me. In Aldana's favor, she's a long fighter. She has shown some power. She has boxing acumen, although I wouldn't describe her as having elite hands per se, and she's proven relatively durable throughout her career. That said, in terms of statistical profiles, she's dwarfed in nearly every metric by Amanda Nunes. This fight is a mismatch, and I expect one-way traffic. This might be the first time I've ever told you that a money line of minus 335 is worth every cent. Put that house on Amanda Nunes. And this is coming from somebody who's called upsets of an extraordinary magnitude, namely Alexa Grasso defeating longtime flyweight kingpin Valentina Shevchenko. It just ain't happening here. My main issue is that I don't want to get too cute chasing plus money on Amanda Nunes. You could try to bank on Irene Aldana's toughness to get her out of the first 2.5 rounds. I still think she succumbs to a finish, but if you bet that combination, you'll find plus money. Alternatively, what I believe to be the safest bet, this is a mismatch. Amanda Nunes is going to collect a scalp. So double chance, submission or TKO, you can lock that in for around minus 130 on a couple different bookies. So anyways, good luck, happy hunting, Amanda Nunes inside the distance. Yo, yeah. All right, y'all, I want to thank you very much for tuning into this program. Your listenership is mucho appreciated. Please take the time to subscribe, rate, and review. As you know, we're heavily dependent on word-of-mouth marketing. Not a big budget here, but we keep plugging away. And more importantly, we keep winning money. So please tell a friend, tell a colleague, tell anybody who shares your enjoyment of this fine sport, anybody that's into sports betting, this is the program for them. Much love, y'all. Until next time, enjoy the event, and please bet responsibly.